So one of the things that I've wanted to do is follow up with the next part of the performance review that I've planned and do a statistical study of what cases the arbitration committee is accepting. Yeah, I've wanted to do more statistical study of what the arbitration committee really is doing as, in numeric terms, in getting away from crunching the outcome of particular cases. I've never known an arbitration case that satisfied everybody. Never known one. They have a set of crude tools at their disposal, and they are often not the best thing for the individuals in each case. And they try to apply what they can do in order to keep the site running. And because those tools are crude, there's never going to be a time when everybody's happy. And some of the people who go there are simply not reasonable, sometimes perhaps not rational people. They don't appear to act rationally anyway. And so you have the additional challenge of, well, can you try to work around individual limitations?
I think one problem that I noticed is that once a finding of fact or similar is written, I don't think I've ever seen in any arbitration case it be rewritten, even if there are problems with it. They may provide a second version, but
I've seen cases where they have.
the original one?
Did you see the Barrett v. Rosenthal case?
No.
Flo Knight led basically a rebellion after Fred Bowder wrote an initial decision that was based upon some unsupported accusations that were never supported. And he wrote some finding of facts that would have gone against a particular individual that was a named party in the case, and two people had very strongly claimed this guy did this, 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 but not provided the evidence for it. Fred had written up a decision, he was getting votes for it, and a number of us were saying on the proposed decision talk, wait a second, there's an assumption that he hasn't done this. This has never been substantiated. We're looking through the diffs. We can't find this. We're looking through the pages. We can't find this. Flo Knight, basically, she actually at one point said, stop the presses. And you saw much more about a year ago of multiple different types of findings being proposed by different arbitrators competing for attention, and you could see more of that progress on the proposed decision page. That was one where it changed around. J.M. Fangio, Chris J. Nelson had an even more dramatic turnaround. It was in the voting phase when some strange activity happened. I requested a check user, and the check user found out that one of, well, I guess I have to say which one it was. It was J.M. Fangio, was a returning sock puppet of a community band editor, positively confirmed through check user. The check user also found that a rather shadowy IP editor, who had not been a named party in the case, was also basically had created a spoofing attack timed to a user block on Chris J. Nelson in order to make it look, give the appearance that Chris J. Nelson, immediately after his user block, had created a spoofing account on the other named party. And basically, there was a proposal underway to site ban Chris J. Nelson that was gaining unanimous support up until that point. When it turned out that he was being trolled by two different trolls, I mean, there's no kinder way to put it, they backed away from that decision and wrote a new one, placing him under probation. And I don't want to get too much into what happened after that, but it, at least in terms of the outcome of that case, that was a dramatic turnaround that occurred during voting.
I'm referring more to smaller things where a finding of fact is phrased poorly or has problems or has one minor problem in it. There is often not a attempt to create to seek a better wording, but they just run with it, even if there are objections.
That's one of the changes that's occurred in the last 6 to 8 months. It used to be that you would see those competing wordings, that you would see those competing formulations, and they would much more, in the view of the community, search for the right way to do this and then move around. You would actually see people changing, strike through one thing and say, you know, that's better, or I'm going to formulate this. Yeah, that's something they're doing a lot less of now.
It may be that they're doing some of it offline, but...
Oh, undoubtedly they are.
It would look better for them if they were to return to that process, particularly as the caseload is much smaller now.
Well, the open caseload, we don't know how many closed cases they're hearing. I understand more than anything else what they hear is appeals. People who were community banned, they go and they complain, and everybody says, well, you can appeal your community ban to the arbitration committee, you can appeal this to the arbitration committee. And some of those people are very diligent about appealing that.
Well, should we look at the request for comment as the last part of this?
Yeah.
Shall I just give a quick summary of the various proposals being made?
Do you want to introduce the request for comment first?
Right. The request for comment, Wikipedia:request for comment/arbitration committee. Arbitration committee capitalized, found under the policy section of requests for comment, was created by Lawrence Cohen. On Lawrence Cohen's leaving, he requested that it be moved to the main space, and this was done by Derova and M. Bisons. The reason for the RFC, as stated, is that there has never been a request for comment on the arbitration committee itself and its processes. Initially drafted and made by Jimbo Wales, then modified over time by the committee itself, it is historically isolated with all major committee discussion behind the scenes over IRC, private email list, or other means. In recent times, across several cases, and historically, the role, purpose, workload, and function of the committee has come under growing scrutiny. A major factor in the December 2011 and 7 elections was whether or not arbitrator prospects would have the time to perform the duties they were volunteering for. This RSC will provide an opportunity for the community to interact in a central discussion to help shape the future of the committee and for how it would and could best serve the Wikipedia community.
Actually, I have several questions about this.
Yes.
Just observing sort of from the outside, I have not posted on this, and I don't intend to do so at this time, since I'm sort of using it as research. It feels strange to post on it, you know?
Yes.
I have to say, you know, all that discussion in anthropology about whether you're supposed to be involved with your own research project, you know, it's sort of weird with Wikipedia, you know?
Yes. Well, I've got that also by hosting this on something that I opened, and occasionally, other times in not the Wikipedia Weekly, it's like we discuss something that I've been a part of. So it's
very
kind of
strange.
It's not regular journalism, you know. That's not the way that but it's a little bit close to blogging by conference.
Makes some sense.
It's a different animal. On the other hand, if somebody decides to study this later formally, it can help to have it from the horse's mouth rather than being paraphrased. Like some of the things that Shu said, I can correct right now. Like just, you know, and he made a very, very good summary, but this is how, in good faith, some of these confusions do arise. And if things are thorny enough, that can throw things in weird directions.
I was going to say my first thought when I started reading this RFC was, it's strange for it to start statement by somebody or other, which is the heading. And I was confused why one person was posting this for somebody who had retired. I mean, automatically I started thinking like, well, why did this person not want to post it themselves? Why did they retire rather than posting it? You know, I mean, like I had this whole list of questions about that before I even started to read the thing.
Mm.
You know, because I don't really necessarily know all of the people who always post to these requests for comments. That's the other thing about Wiki, is a lot of it works on who you know.
Yeah.
You know, you recognize people's usernames, and you're like, oh, well, I know that person, you know. They're not crazy, right? it is very interesting when, like, I've been reading lots and lots of archives of pages, and to try to figure out what is actually going on is not simple. It is not simple. I mean, people say, like, oh, all the history is there. You can figure it out. It's not easy to figure out. And this is one of those things that I think might stump people when they first come to it, is they're like, well, who is this person? Why did they not decide not to post it themselves? Did they not want to be involved in the drama? What's going on, you know?
Let's see here. Well,
I'm just saying that was the first thing I asked myself before I even went on. I was like, huh, you know.
Okay, well, if there's any confusion about this, Lawrence Coden is not somebody that I'm normally allied with. He and I have had very different views on a lot of things, and not always on the opposite side of the fence, but we're just different Wikipedians. He started this around the close of an ARPCon case several months ago, and I asked him to hold off. I was concerned about, well, where's this heading? Is this just going to weaken ARPCOM without setting anything better in its place? You realize that there's a real danger that every banned troll who's been shown the door over the last 4 years will show up and try to rehear their own case.
Absolutely.
Right here. And
their personal grievance with ARPCOM will now become part of the request.
Yeah. And when Matt told me that he'd received a request from Lawrence to bring this live, I mean, personally, and until I talked to Matt and found that out, I was like, yeah, my thought was, an RFC will probably happen. It probably will, but I don't want it to go yet. But at the point where you have an established editor retiring, it is his parting request, it was going to be fulfilled. It was going to be fulfilled quickly. And by offering to do it myself, first I was able to delay it by a couple of hours while we did the Not the Wikipedia Weekly episodes yesterday. And second, because I think a fair number of the people in the community think that the case that has my name on it was not one of the best held. And, you know, I'm not under any formal sanction, but I'm under censure that some people think was procedurally flawed. I am not using this as a platform to raise my own grievances. I'm more interested in the health of the site than in my own case. And I was hoping that by opening it myself and specifically orienting it away from soapbox to air my grievance and toward, let's look on the systemic, let's look at the procedural issues, let's get away from the micro problem and look at the macro problems. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that coming from me, that might carry a little bit more weight. And so far, at least, there has not been a whole lot of rehashing particular cases here. I know some people think it was too soon. You know, if I hadn't been in this position myself, if Lawrence hadn't resigned when he did, I would have put it off. You know, not yesterday, not while it was going on. But it was going to go up yesterday. And the only question was how.
If we quickly review the proposals being made so far, Durova, would you like to discuss your own introductory statement?
Well, I tried to phrase it in ways that certainly they do pertain to the current case that got announced yesterday, but they also, in general terms, apply to previous cases. Some of them specifically don't. The last one I added, if you look in there, was a little bit out of order because I don't want to make it the final word, is security and leaks of the arbitration committee decisions. Several months back, there was a specific leak from the arbitration committee mailing list regarding a particular administrator. Something that was said in private, out of context, got repeated. And also, I well know that stuff that gets said in a private mailing list with a lot of context that is understood by the other people in the mailing list can really look much different when the same text is published to people who don't have that background. They draw conclusions, they run off in directions that were never part of the original discussion. They surmise things that are way, way, way off base, that are within the text, but nobody interpreted that. And yeah, I mean, I think when something is posted in that kind of a setup, in my case, the list was set up to deal with cyberstalking. We had people who were getting death threats, who were getting calls to their employer trying to get them fired, who were getting all sorts of things, and were untrained to this, who were trying to feel out solutions. Some things spun into strange directions, and the particular email that got published had a context of its own that was not examined. And for the most part, the community didn't want to hear it. But that's a different thing from this. I do want to say that I don't think that publishing the committee's private deliberations on the case that got announced yesterday is going to be a helpful thing. I think people would be too apt to seize upon phrases, you know, that they don't know the context for.
If anything, it might have it spiral out of control if he actually lets things loose. Because then there'll be, well, this was said here, this was said that, what's wrong with that, what's with that? Like, oh my god, this is getting worse if you let out the mail and stuff.
And how are they going to deliberate in the future after that? Would it have a chilling effect on their own discussions? Would they have to say, I mean, they already have to worry a little bit, well, what if something gets leaked? But, you know, if the whole deliberation that they, you know, conducted in private and discussed with an expectation of privacy, you know, you choose your words differently. And, you know, will they be afraid to be candid on some of these more sensitive cases if whole deliberations that are private get dumped on the community absent of context? I mean, we can vacate that decision. We can analyze and reassess and set new parameters for how and when the arbitration committee holds cases in private, but I don't think that publication of those particular emails is likely to help things, unless the arbitrators decide among themselves without pressure that, you know what, we want to clear the air, we've decided upon this mutually, here you go. I don't think you should twist their arms for that.
However, that said, I think there is a case to be made that there was no compelling reason for the Orange Marlin case to be held in private, and as
Absolutely.
Such, they should explain why they decided to do this and probably apologize and redo the case, if you ask me. Because you can't vote to sanction someone and not let them say anything in their defense, then tell them that appeals will not be listened to, as FD2 did.
As
or rather,
the arbitration...
he said, his specific words were, Orange Marlin may appeal, but I do not think it will cause us to change our minds.
Asking the arbitration committee for an apology is not very likely to be fruitful. But I agree with you very much. I saw no compelling reason for the case to be held in behind closed doors. And that's part of my objection. At the same time, we've got this other case going on where somebody whose overall history is much more problematic is being granted a month just as his request to prepare better evidence. You have another case ongoing where, you know, somebody who's also very established and has, although with some problems, overall, I think most people would say, if you're not partisan to the particular disputes, overall a better record, isn't even being told that a case is considered. I think we should establish parameters for what gets held in private, and you can't anticipate everything, but you can anticipate most of it. I think if there's a sensible reason why it can't be discussed on site, okay,
I suppose I'm less worried about the secretness of it, because I'm sure there are reasons that would exist for such a thing to have to happen, you know, to protect someone's identity or something like that. And I can envision why that might have to be. What I can't envision is why someone would not be allowed to present evidence in their own defense.
Well, when these cases do get heard behind closed doors, very often the person is not aware of it, and in many cases that are held out in the open, in a substantial proportion of them, not all of the case is on the evidence page.
Yes.
Right. But, I mean, why, even if something is secret, why can you not, why is the person being investigated or accused not allowed to defend themselves? I mean, I guess because I live in the United States and I hear about Guantanamo Bay all the time, you know, I just have these horrible visions of what's going on, you know, I can only, you know, it's hard for me to assume the best at this
point. Let me give you an example, then, of a case where I submitted evidence. The Alcavar case. I submitted private evidence that that succeeded in getting an administrator DCSOPT and another editor's stipend. And it was the outgrowth of one of the site's most persistent and prolific banned sock puppeteers. Both of those individuals were collaborating with that person to help him damage Wikipedia's database. He was continuing to create sock puppets. He would go over to an article and try to get stuff out of it. And if somebody came along and reverted him, he would get in teammates. And if it went far enough, then he would call upon the administrator in his pocket and get that person to, I hate to say it, misuse the tools. Now, when you're documenting that kind of thing, do you really want to show people exactly how, oh, this is how we caught you exploiting the site, so when you come back and do it the next time after this person has already created hundreds of sock puppets, hundreds,
you
can now refine your technique and do it better.
Right, I understand what you're saying, and actually I think we could have a really interesting debate about that. This is probably really not the time. But what I was really asking about was, is there a time when someone shouldn't be able to defend themselves? Do you think that person, no matter, you know, that user, no matter what they did, should not have been able to defend themselves?
No, and in this case particularly, the reason given was that they said that he would create, quote, smoke, and thus try to distract the arbitration committee, and they didn't want to have the distraction, and so decided to hold the hearing in secret, which is, for an editor in good standing, a very difficult thing to justify. There are probably cases where it would be.
Well, what about for any editor? I don't mean just an editor in good standing. I mean, I guess because, again, I do come from a U.S. Perspective when it comes to, you know, the law and people's right. You know, we don't just grant people in the U.S. a right to defend themselves because we think they might be innocent. We grant people the right to defend themselves, you know, no matter what they've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're already a convicted felon, for example,
right.
We still allow them to defend themselves in whatever cases come up. You know, and I guess that is the thing that really concerns me.
In all honesty, the only case where I could see where it would be appropriate to not allow any defense to be provided would be in cases where letting the user on Wikipedia at all threatens the site. For instance, if he was hacking the site or sending virus-laden emails to the arbitration committee.
You see, the problem is, and I do agree with as much as is feasible, letting the person know what it is that they're under scrutiny for, but sometimes seeing anything at all is just material that can be parsed to you to exploit the site better. And I would certainly encourage both for on-site and off-site thing. I would certainly encourage, to the extent that it is feasible and can be done with the best interests of the site at heart, to inform the person the general shape of, well, we're concerned about these things, we're concerned about these things. Due to the nature of this, we're not at liberty to give you everything. And that's a difference from standard U.S. due process, where the defense has a right to examine the full evidence.
Well, they don't anymore. That's, of course, the really interesting thing. In a lot of terrorism cases, for example, the government has said this evidence is classified and you don't have the right to see it because it's of national security issues.
I could see if there's security issues.
So that people are not being able to see the evidence against them.
I don't think there's any case that they should not be allowed to provide a defense, even if it's an ignorance of the exact nature of the evidence. They should be allowed to provide a defense.
The problem, no serious reason was given, like, the site will die.
What I'd like to see established is a standard by which we say there should be a compelling reason before you take this kind of thing off site.